All the tax collectors and sinners were approaching to listen to him, and the Pharisees and scribes were complaining, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. So he got up and went to his father, but while the son was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran, threw his arms around his neck, and kissed him. The son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and you in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father told his servants, "Quick, bring out the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Then bring the fatted calf and slaughter it, and let's celebrate with the feast. Because this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So they began to celebrate.
Thank you, Brandy. And if you want to follow along, she was in Luke chapter 15. And we made a little reference to it last week as Todd talked about the first part of this passage. But we're going to kind of look at the second part. Would you pray with me? Heavenly Father, thank you for your never-ending grace. Thank you for your love for us that is unconditional, that is patient, and always leads us to reconciliation. God, thank you for this example, for your willingness to welcome us as we are, to welcome all of us as we are. It's in your son's name I pray. Amen. So last week, Todd introduced us to this parable, and we're kind of looking at it through the month of August and talking about the prodigal son, the parable here in Luke chapter 15. And last week, Todd made reference to the son who is known as the prodigal son. And this morning, we're going to take a look at the father, those verses 20 through 24 there in John, or in Luke's gospel of chapter 15. And so we're going to kind of take a look at that. Before we begin, how many of you love a good story? Love a good story? Okay. All right. How many of you would rather read the book than watch the movie? A few of you. How many of you would rather watch the movie than read the book? Yeah, that's me. I'm that guy. I don't read a whole lot of fiction books. I read the books I read are normally nonfiction or something related to theology or something like that that many other people probably think it was very boring. Kay looks at me, she goes, "What are you reading?" And I'm like, "Well, this and she goes, "Yeah, I probably wouldn't read that." Anyway, and so, but like, she loves the stories, and we like to read stories to Harley. And so one of the things we do is we started early, even before she even knew what was going on and what we were reading books, because, you know, my wife's a second grade teacher, and she does research, and kids who read better were read to as babies on up and things like that. So we read lots of books. Harley loves books. So we love stories at our house. Kaylee and I, one of the first few dates we went on was going to the movies, and we went to watch one of the Hobbit movies. And so we love movies and books and different things in our house. We love a good story. And the truth is, as human beings, we all love a good story, okay? I want you to think of the worst movie you've ever seen. The worst movie, okay? And I want you to think about why you didn't like it. What was so bad about it, okay? For me, one of the worst movies I ever saw is actually a pretty good film up until the end, but it's the worst movie to me because of the ending. It's called The Perfect Storm. It's based on a true story, which probably is why I don't like it. But like, it's based on a true story of some fishermen that go out to sea and all that kind of stuff, and spoiler alert, they don't make it, okay? But in the whole movie, the way they paint the picture, because I'd never heard the story before until I watched the movie, is that everybody's going to be just fine and all this kind of stuff, and they build it up, and they're getting through it and all this kind of stuff, and then they end the movie, and nobody comes back, and it's just the end, and it's all sad. And I'm sitting there going, and I remember I was watching, and it happened to be with Gary Redburn, those of you who know Gary Redburn, and Gary Redburn looks at me at the end of the movie, and he goes, "That's the worst movie ever." And I go, "Dude, I agree," because it didn't have a happy ending. Most of us love a happy ending, or something that in the end has some type of resolve or liberation or victory. It doesn't mean that everything has to go perfect in the story, but most of us love a good story with a good ending. If it doesn't have a good ending, we're like, "Eh, I'm not going to recommend that one on Netflix," or something along those lines. It's just not something we're interested in. When I think of the prodigal son and this story, if there's ever a parable or a story that Jesus tells, this one is probably most well-known and has the most overarching story structure of good story of any of the stories that Jesus tells. Like, you could easily turn this movie and go with Hollywood's, expansion of the story, and they could add stuff and do this and that kind of stuff. You can make it an awesome movie. You really could. It's got a great beginning, middle, and end. And it's got everything you expect in a good story. And a good story, I remember I was listening to a guy named Donald Miller, and he wrote a book called A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. And it's basically talking about story and how he's trying to evaluate his own life and living a story. And one of the things he said always has to happen in a good story is the main character has to endure conflict. Has to endure conflict. Because if they don't endure any conflict, there's no arc to the story. It's just like this. And you're like, oh, okay. I went to the Walmart and I bought some, Downy Soft. And then I walked through and I found $5 and I hopped in my car and I went home. Cool story, bro. Okay. Like nothing happened, But then you could hear about the story that my wife had to experience at Walmart yesterday, and it's a whole different crazy thing. Okay. I'm not going to go into all that. It's a really crazy story. But there's all kinds of things that we have that are not good stories. And then there's good stories. And good stories always have some type of conflict. And it's the same thing here in this story that Jesus tells, this parable that he tells of the prodigal son. The prodigal son decides he wants to, as Todd referenced last week, basically wants his father dead, right? I mean, that's what it means when you're going to get an inheritance. Todd made reference to it last week. Is if you want someone's inheritance, basically you're saying, I want you dead and I want what you have. And he says to his father, you're dead to me and I'm going to go do my own thing and do all that stuff. And we talked about that last week and this, all the things that he squandered away and all this kind of stuff, and finally he realizes he needs to come back to his father. And this morning, we look at that second part of the story where the father is there. And it's an interesting interaction that happens here. The father has a reaction that, let's be honest, most of us would never have. I mean, if we're truly honest, okay? I even try to put myself in the story. So here's what happens a lot of times. When we read these parables, we always try to figure out, okay, where do I fit in the story? You ever do that? I do that. Where do I fit? And so we've put ourselves, obviously, in the two sons. We'll talk about the second son next week. But we put ourselves in the place of the two sons. Maybe you find yourself as the prodigal son, or maybe you find yourself as the elder son who has a problem with the whole party thing. But most of us don't ever really put ourselves in the story as the father. We just don't. Because why? The father represents who? You can talk back to me. It's okay. It's like youth. You can talk back to me. God. Okay. Sunday school answer, right? Okay. He represents God. And so we don't really ever place ourselves in that part of the story. But I kind of wanted to put myself in there and thinking about my daughter. Okay. Harley, every now and then has to have a little spanking. Okay. Because she doesn't do what she says. All right. And yes, we're spanking parents, and she'll tell you. She'll come up to you. She came up to me in the sound booth. She goes, Mommy's spanking my hiney. She turns Italian when she says that. Mama's spanking my hiney, okay? But anyway, she tell you that, and she tells you all those things, or Mama told me no, or Daddy told me no, and things like that. And so all those different things. And I think about, as she gets older and different things, because, everybody messes up, and we do different things. And if she would have pulled this as my kid, like the prodigal son pulls, what would be my reaction as her father? I like to think I would do the exact same thing, but I know myself. And I probably would look at her and be like, okay, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Let's get this figured out. Here's your punishment. Let's be honest. Most of us would be that way because as good parents, you want to make sure your children are disciplined. They learn their lesson and all that kind of stuff. And almost surprisingly, as our upside down logo up here says, as far as turning something upside down, Jesus turns it completely upside down and gives this father response that basically the father doesn't even care what the son has to say. Doesn't care. The son has this thing rehearsed. He's going to come tell him, here's what I'm going to do. And the father doesn't care. He's already decided in his mind that I'm just glad my son is home. I'm just glad that he's here. That he's okay. I don't care what he's done. I don't care what he's squandered, what mistakes he's had, but I'm going to welcome him as he is right here, right now. No exceptions, no conditions. Here we are. This is what the Father does. And we're reminded of it, you know, good Christian people, we reference and we're like, yes, of course, that's how God is with us and his grace and all those kinds of things. And we can sit here, and many of you could probably tell the sermon to me this morning just as good because you've heard it in Sunday school for so many years, because this is probably the most well-known, other than maybe the Good Samaritan parable that Jesus tells. We love it. We love that reference. But maybe there's a little bit more to it. You ever heard of it maybe being considered the prodigal father? So I had to, you know, as a good old biblical studies major, I had to go and like look up definitions of stuff, because that's what my preaching teacher told me, preaching professor in college told me. And so I looked up that word prodigal. Here's the definition of prodigal. It has two different definitions. One, spending money or resources freely and recklessly, wastefully and extravagant. Okay? That's definition number one, all right? That obviously talks about the son, right? He was wasteful. He did all the crazy stuff and all that. Here's the second definition that I was unaware of. Having or giving something on a lavish scale. Giving something on a lavish scale. So not only is this a prodigal son story, but it's a prodigal father story. The father gives lavishly. He gives above and beyond anybody's expectations for him to give. And as we'll see next week when we look at the other son, it really threw him for a loop. His expectation of what was going to happen was completely different than what the father did. But the father could also be considered prodigal. Sometimes we just glance right over that, of talking about how amazing and overwhelming he was with that response and what he was willing to do. You know, speaking of good stories, I have a favorite movie. Many of you may not know this movie, but it's my favorite movie. It's been my favorite movie for years. And I can't really even give a great reason, just because there's a lot of reasons why I love this movie. But how many of you have ever heard of the movie Legend of Bagger Vance? Legend of Bagger Vance. Anybody heard that one? Okay, it's a golf movie. Go figure. Okay, and so it's a great movie. It's got Matt Damon and Will Smith and Charlize Theron. And they kind of portray the story based around the Depression time. And it's about this guy named Randolph Juneau, played by Matt Damon, okay? And Randolph Juneau was this great golfer, amateur golfer, before he goes off to World War I, and he goes through all these different things that happen, and he comes back, and he's scarred for it, and a lot of things happen, and he just gives up golf, and he kind of gives up a lot on life, goes through a really dark period. And while that's going on, his girlfriend that he left behind when he went to war, he basically ignores her when he comes home. And there's a whole thing that happens within that relationship, the romantic side of the story. But Juneau comes back, and they're trying to figure out what's going on with him, and they're going to try and have this big tournament to try and bring them out of the Great Depression, and they're going to bring in the great Bobby Jones, one of the best golfers of all time, and Walter Hagen, who's also one of the best golfers of all time, and they're going to have this big match. Well, then everybody in the town, because it's based in Savannah, Georgia, is going to have this. They're like, we have to have somebody represent us. And they're like, well, Bobby Jones is from Georgia. That counts, right? They're like, no, we need somebody from Savannah. So they're like, well, what about Randolph Juneau? And everybody just starts laughing because nobody's seen him. Nobody's heard of him. Ever since he came back from the war, he was non-existent, not playing golf or anything like that. And they're like, no, let's go figure it out. And there's this little boy. And he goes and finds Randolph Juneau because he knows where he's at. And it's one of my favorite scenes ever in a movie. If you haven't, I won't give it away what happens, but like, go check it out. I think it's even on Netflix now. So, but this little boy goes and confronts Randolph Juneau, talks him into it, and then there's this whole thing that happens. He finally comes and plays golf, but in the midst of it, he's trying to decide whether he's going to play golf, and he's hitting balls out in his pasture just outside of his house. It's in the dark, can't really even see where the ball's going, and he's hitting it, and it's ugly. It's like me after I haven't played since college. Like, it's just, he's shanking them, and it's just, it's bad, okay? If you play golf or you watch golf, you're watching this scene, it just makes you cringe because it's just so bad. And all of a sudden, out of the darkness comes Will Smith, who plays Bagger Vance in the movie. And Will Smith comes up through there, and he's talking to him. He just comes out of nowhere. And one of my favorite lines in the whole world, Matt Damon, Randolph Jr., looks at him and says, I could have hit you. And he says, no, sir. I placed myself directly in the middle of where you were aiming. I figured I'd be safe right there. And so it kind of creates this character that Will Smith has in this movie, and they have this relationship. And basically what happens is he agrees, Bagger Vance does, to be Juna's caddy for the amount of $5. Now, the winner of the tournament wins $10,000, and a caddy shares $1,000. But he says, I don't care if you win, lose, whatever, I just need $5. And so he goes through this, and not only is he caddying for him in golf, but he walks him through some life situations and a lot of things that go on. But I think of the story, and many people would think, who's the main character of the movie? Who do you think? Golly, y'all just jumped on me, Tyler. You're supposed to say Juna. No, anyway, okay? But like the way the story tells, it looks like it's more about Juna. But really the story is about Bagger Vance and his generosity and his grace in the relationship and that friendship and how he helps his friend that he's never met, builds this friendship, and helps him get back on track with his life. I think so often we make this parable more about the sons and less about the father. Because to be honest with us, ourselves, we do that in life. We make things more about us than we do about the father. We make things more about my decisions and what I do and whether I'm doing the right thing, the wrong thing, how I treat different situations, whether or not I do what I'm supposed to, and all those kinds of things. And we oftentimes treat our relationship with God, our relationship with others, as focused and inward on us, rather than realizing the real focus of the story, that is the great story of God's grace, is focused on God, not us. And I think so often we look at this parable as well as our lives and miss that. We miss it greatly. We take it completely out of context. We take our own lives out of context, and we act just like the prodigal son. And we go about and do our own thing. And we lose the focus of what is the story, who is the story focused on. I mean, the very prayer Jesus teaches his disciples to pray says, your kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. In other words, it's about you. It's about your kingdom. It's about you and your focus and who you are first in our lives, first in our world, not us. And we miss that so often. And so the other side of this, with this parable, if God is supposed to be the focus, if the Father is supposed to be the focus, not only of this story, but our lives in general, the very idea of who we are as a church should mirror that. We should mirror the Father. Again, we get so focused on being the prodigal or the elder son and all the things that are mixed up, and we forget our role as the church, as people who claim to be Christians, as followers of Jesus, the ones that represent who God is in the world as best as we can. We should be like the Father. You know, we took some time this week, Rusty and Todd and I, to hang the sign. I don't know if you saw it on the front. It says, all are welcome. It's a great sign. It's an awesome job. Love it. It's a great message. And we all are like, oh yeah, that's really cool. But how many of us actually think that? How many of us truly believe that and truly think that all people are welcome here? All people. That's a challenge for me because, you know, we have situations and people in our lives that, yeah, let's be honest, we don't really feel that way. And we set all are welcome, and we have a little asterisk by all. And you go down the footnote here. Who's that? Except, or only if they do, or as long as they, and you fill in the blank. I think not only is that a sign for people to know that they are welcome here, I think it's a sign for us to be reminded of the people we should be, of the church we should be, because we get too focused on us and less on the Father. The story, and I'm not talking about the parable, I'm talking about the story of our lives, the story of what's going on in and around us, is not about us. It's not about us. It's about the Father. It's about the grace of God. It's about what Jesus truly came to present. What he's talking about here is not to be focused on the guy who messed up and the son who decided he wanted to do everything wrong, or even about the elder son that's going away and thinks he's going to be judgmental and he's got it all figured out, but it's really about the one in the middle of the story, the Father, and what's his reaction. And I love this reaction. Todd made reference to it last week. The only other place where it talks about this, how's it translated, Todd? Help me out. The neck, fell on his neck. Thank you. Blanked on it. He fell on his neck, which most of us think of like MMA or something like that, fell on his neck. But no, like fell on his neck is like, it's, have you ever hugged somebody so hard that they just fall on you? I love it when I come home from whatever it might be, and I come through the door and Harley just runs, and it's like she almost knocks you down when she gives you a hug. It's like the best hug ever as a parent. I'm just saying, it's the best thing ever. So, like, teenagers, young people, hug your parents like that. They love it. Okay. Now, some of you, like Ben, don't run your mom over. Okay. Okay. But, like, I love that. It's that she falls on my neck. Like, that's, she literally hugs me and embraces me so hard that it's like she fell on my neck. And the only other place that phrase is used is when we're talking about Jacob and Esau. Now, if you remember that story, Jacob, he put it to Esau. Stole his inheritance, much like the prodigal son. Went off and did his own thing and then finds him in a mess. Wrestles with God and he realizes, man, I done my brother wrong. It is not good. And he's going to send guys ahead to meet Esau when he's getting ready to meet him, saying, please don't kill me. Because in that culture, in that day, the very thing that Esau could have done is just ended Jacob. Because he stole everything from him. And ran away with everything that was his. And then deserted them. And Esau instead meets Jacob, and it says he fell on his neck. He embraced him so hard before there was even any utterance of forgiveness or an I'm sorry or anything, because Esau had already made his decision. The Father has already made his decision with us. We are forgiven. We are shown grace. We are shown mercy. No exceptions, no conditions, no asterisk. We are all welcome. Are we the same? Do we really believe that sign outside our church? Do we really live that in our lives? Do we really live focused on the Father? Because the truth is, when it comes to us, we are more likely to criticize than to celebrate. I mean, you look at social media, across the board, I find myself in it like, oh man, they should have done this. I mean, I'm a Thunder fan, okay? It's sad right now, I know. Kaylee and I weeped a little bit this summer. Okay, all right, we're big Thunder fans, we love it, and you know, we kind of, we're like, man, and so we criticize Sam Presti, we criticize the organization, then we criticize Paul George, and you criticize. Sports were the worst about it, okay? Fire the coach, okay? Whatever it might be. But we're that way with everything else, with our schools, with our churches. We're really quick to criticize before we celebrate. We're really quick to criticize the people who come in our doors before we are to celebrate the fact that they're in our doors. Because what are we more about here? Are we celebrating the grace of God? Or are we holding each other down with what they've done wrong? We're really quick to criticize rather than to celebrate, because it says in verse 20, he was filled with compassion. Some translations say, moved with compassion. His compassion changed everything. The Father's compassion for us overshadows everything else. There is no judgment. There is no criticism. There is no conditions. It's compassion. It is grace. It's the very love of God that welcomes all people. So the challenge for us is, are we that type of people as a church? Are we people who truly believe in your kingdom come, your will be done? Are we truly the people who say all are welcome, not just in our words or in our signs we put on the building, but in our actions? And is our life truly focused on the one that should be focused on, and that is the Father?